Poutinerie, Studio 330, Tango Nuevo, Terra Natural Foods, The Toucan, The Wit, and YGK Thrift. Enjoy the benefits of donating. Give today via CFRC.ca. Join us on Wednesday, November 27th for CFRC's 24-hour Radiothon. Catch all your regular Wednesday favorites, plus some special one-off live programs during this dynamic funding drive event. The fun begins at 8 a.m. Wednesday. Turn on, tune in, rock out.
G'day and welcome to a Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's and around Ontario. My name is CJ the DJ and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. Of course, a show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs here at Queen's and CFRC. So thank you very much to both of them. Now, if you may miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CFRC Podcast. So no excuse not to hear what our awesome students and postdoctoral fellows are doing. Today, though, I have another special guest, although I know I say that every week, but it is another special guest because our guest today is outside of Queen's. So I'd like to introduce you to Blue Maran Dong, who is doing a PhD in communication at Carleton University under the supervision of Dr. Dwayne Winsek. So welcome to a Grad Chat, Blue.
Hello, Colette. Thank you so much for having me. Hello, everyone.
It is great to have you. And I might have just mentioned, you know, Blue is not from Queens. Blue has come from Carleton. And I got to meet Blue this past summer at our writing retreat, The Lake Shift, which I, as you know, I talk a lot about because I love that. I love that writing retreat because it is an opportunity for us to also invite PhD students from other Ontario universities. And this year, Blue came along. And Blue is the perfect person to have on an interview because she loves talking, loves her research, and we're going to hear a lot more about that. But first of all, Blue, what made you want to sign up for the Lake Shift, and then what did you think about it? And I'm hoping it's all positive, but if it's not, I understand.
Thank you so much, Colette. That was such a great experience. Oh my God, the Lake Shift. I dream about that every night. It's just so peaceful. And initially, when I heard about this opportunity, I thought that, okay, I just want to be somewhere that's nature, that's beautiful. And the idea of getting to meet 40 other PhD students from other universities and just live with them and chat about their research for a week is just wonderful. And I was totally right about it. It leave me with so many beautiful memories. I'm still grateful about it. Thank you so much for working me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I, just for everyone's, you really did have a good little group that got together and enjoyed the lake, enjoyed the environment. We were very lucky this year that the weather wasn't too hot and we only had a couple, you know, one day of a bit of rain, but that didn't deter any of you going out, which was brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. Even when it's rains, you're beautiful. And what's best of it all is the company. The company is the best.
Yes. And that's why, Blue, I enjoy going every single year because I learn so much from all of you as well. And so I think having us all together, we feed off each other, which is a lovely part of it, without all those other distractions that we usually have when we're back home, which is good. So thank you very much for coming to that. I never know.
Organizing it.
Well, that's good, because you never know who we're going to get, but every year we've had awesome students come along, so thank you for that. So I guess we should get on and talk about your research. And it was interesting, before we started this interview, I said to Blue, so what is your research title? And Blue sort of hesitated, and she goes, well, I haven't really got one. And I think that's the beauty of research. Sometimes you might have a title, and then halfway through it could change, because different things happen. So why are you not necessarily finding it difficult to find a title? I'm assuming you've got a lot of things you want to incorporate, and then it's a matter of trying to hone or narrow it down to something to help you get a title. Or are you going to put the title right at the end?
I think I might just put the title at the very end of it. The reason for that is I'm simultaneously working on 7 different projects. So I already have many titles for some of the work that I already published.
Right.
But not for my main thesis. For that, I'm still working on it. And I'm still trying to find the central synthesis for all of it, to combine everything I do into a synthesized body of work, and to come up, and hopefully I can come up with something clever. But you know, if I want to just let the title to stall me for my progress,
right,
and go on with something that need more hard work first, and then I can always circle back to work on it.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. And to be honest, I'm surprised people do have a title at the front. Potentially can limit you of what you're trying to research, instead of looking at the bigger picture and then narrowing it down later. Yeah. So I'd be interested to hear what it is when you've finally done it, as they say. So, but let me let people in. I mean, you're in communications. And as my audience knows, I give you an opportunity to give us a bit of an overview of what you are trying to study. And you say in your research topic, some scholars compare tech platform companies to essential infrastructure like bridges and roads near home. These companies have gradually become crucial channels for information exchange in the market and connecting various parties and transactions. They are also essential for many people's livelihoods, in some cases in replacing traditional paid telecom services like phone calls and texts. For some, these platforms are the bridge for handling everything in their daily lives. However, unlike bridges and roads, which are public systems designed to protect public interests and sustainability, tech platforms might suddenly deny access to certain individuals for even legitimate users. And I think further down you talked about equating private interests with public interests not only overlooks the issues arising from the increasingly blurred lines between the two, but also worsens the damage that conflicts of interest can cause to sustainable public systems. Now, that was a bit of an intro, but tell me about, what are you trying to look at? Are you looking at how these tech systems play out and they're more for profit as opposed to necessarily looking after us, comparing that to what they potentially should be doing? What are you trying to do here, or trying to even sort of create an awareness of for us?
Well, okay, so first I expanded my research from my first study of food traceability systems to technology platform companies like Google and Facebook.
Right.
Just like food traceability systems, more and more individuals, business, and governments rely on those technology giants to provide systematic support and service. And especially true that these technology companies are getting involved in areas that have traditionally been public service.
Right.
But we have the expectations that they will act in the public's best interest.
Right.
However, this is where the bigger issues come in, right? Because if we compare technology corporations with traditional public infrastructures like roads and bridges, there are some similarities between those two, but the main similarity lies in the fact that they provide essential service, but there are so many differences.
Right.
And I explore those differences to help everyone understand that what's at stake. So, for example, that the first difference is, even though those technology companies often claim to serve the public, their main goal is just to make money.
Yeah.
You know, confusing their private interest with public good can really create a lot of conflicts that harm public system and the flow of accurate information. Also, those companies have changed how business work, especially in industries like news agencies. Many news outlets have struggled because technology companies have disrupted traditional ways of making money, such as advertising sponsorship.
Right, right.
Also that unlike public infrastructures, which is meant to serve everyone for the long term, technology corporations just don't guarantee the same access. For example, they have removed the news content in countries like Spain, Australia, Canada recently. Right. When it hurts their profits, it hurts their corporate profits. And this shows that their focus is more on the business rather than public service that like they often claim in their advertising campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And also that those governments are starting to regulate platform companies more and more. Current law mainly focuses on privacy issues, content, and competition issues. They don't fully protect the public access to information or ensure the public's best interests are always prioritized. Also that unlike physical infrastructure that supports goods and service, tech companies mainly deal with information. They are commercialized those information more than ever. And the challenges they pose are different from those of physical infrastructures. And also that platform companies are different from state-run infrastructures. They share similarities with private telecom companies from the 1970s. Both type of companies claim to serve public, but are more focused on profit.
Yeah.
This really shows that the need to distinguish between public infrastructure like roads to private infrastructure like tech platforms when we compare them. So my project explores the similarities between platform and other prioritized infrastructure like railroads and telecom companies to see what we can learn from for today's regulation. Some research assumes that markets will self-regulate, that new technologies naturally lead to efficiencies and people have all the information they need to make good decisions. These ideas often oversimplify how business and technologies actually affect society.
So it's interesting that you brought up, because it was just recently, as you said, where in Canada they've stopped news getting onto these platforms within Canada. And I always thought at the time, I thought, well, isn't that the whole point of these tech companies is to give us access to anything? Because they seem to be quite selective of what they allow and they don't allow, which doesn't make sense to me because sometimes they're allowing the bad things as opposed to the good things. So what made you want to even study this area? I mean, I know you're in communications, so anything to do with communications, I guess, would interest you. But for me, like, you know, looking at newspapers and news platforms, which have gone through huge change in the last 20, 30 years because of technology. And, you know, the newspaper is dying out, although I still like my hard copy. But then it was going on to the websites and things like that, but then getting picked up, like on the radio, you know, the syndicated programming, it was getting picked up with these other platforms. But now in Canada, some of that is stopping. So with the work that you're doing, was that one of the instigators for you wanting to look at this more closely when Canada suddenly got stopped being able to provide some public services, i.e. the news and what's going on into some of these platforms? I'm speculating there, could be totally wrong.
Right. I actually developed this research from my first research on something totally out of ordinary that was about just a breakfast trend.
Oh, okay. See how so wrong I can be. Well, explain more, Blue. Come on. You've got to let us into that.
So one day I just suddenly run into this new breakfast trend that the idea of knowing your egg's backstory was a thing. You know, like the idea that you can scan a unique special code on your egg and learn all about its life story. You can find out if your egg come from the healthiest, fittest hen. It's no longer just about organic or free-range eggs. Now hens are wearing tag bracelets and fitness trackers to trace their food and activities.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. There you go. Something new every day.
Yes, every day, every single day, and you will see all of the record. The system isn't just about the breakfast egg, though. It can really help the government to find food contamination sources faster than a detective show.
Right.
It also adds extra layer of supervision to prevent animal abuse. Making hens walk 20,000 steps a day means they won't be cramped up in cages.
Yeah.
Well, we can debate whether or not it's abuse to make hen walk 20,000 steps a day. You know, it can also automate the whole food traceability process and save human labor from nasty working environment.
So that's a positive, right, from using
technology? That's a positive thing. Yeah, that's a positive thing. It's also growing into a universal system, making it more credible for food export. It also gives consumers more customized options. Say that you like both chocolate and egg. Now we can combine your two favorite food. Imagine hens that only eat chocolate and laying chocolate flavored egg.
Oh, love it.
Yes. So are you ready to wipe out your credit card and make the purchase?
Probably not.
Okay. So pull out your cell phone to step into the real life of Animal Farm without hassle and mess. Maybe not either. So what do you think the problem is? Do you think the problem is just you're getting to know your ag corporations and the government in turn are getting to know more about you? No, it's because you can't afford it. They jacked up the price for those tech-enabled eggs.
Right.
It also reinforces our reliance on market-oriented methods instead of cultivating trust and rebuilding communities.
Right.
Yeah, so it's the same with the news agencies, right? So this battles between Canadian news and technology platform companies that we end up letting big technology companies sponsoring for journalist trainings using AI, and we actually ask them to pay for, air quote, pay for the news. But that actually, in my own perspective, that actually reinforces our reliance on those market-oriented solutions. It actually reinforces our dependence on those big technology platform companies.
Right.
That was one of my initial arguments, right? So those technology companies actually represent their own corporate interest.
Yeah.
But we expect them to step into the public system, public service systems more and more. And in turn, that we expect them to represent the public interest. But that will never happen because private interest and public interest are two very different things. And this increasing blurred boundaries between public interest and private interest is just getting in the way of us making a better public system down the road.
It's interesting because we're using, apart from eggs earlier, the news as, you know, what's in the public interest and what's in the private interest. And then we know, you know, news on the TV, you can have 24-hour streaming of the news going on. What's the difference between that and then people like the Googles and those other big platforms? Because I guess in a way we can still get the news, but from a different group.
Right. So my research does not delve into that perspective. I don't really, there are tons of research about content moderations, specific about how Google's and Facebook's algorithm actually curate the content of it, or curate the distribution of the content. So decide that who gets to receive what kind of message. And
right.
Also that when journalist is writing the news, they actually reading those metrics provided by platform companies to decide what kind of topic is more popular and whether or not, and decide whether or not they should just follow that trend to generate a more popular content.
Right.
To get the readership, right? My research does not focus more on that. My research is more focused on how Google and Facebook and even other big corporations, big other type of big corporations use different corporate strategies to influence public policy and public interest. For example, I did a detailed comparisons of the way Facebook and Google push for bigger is better through their PR and advertising campaigns. It shows how their power and profits shape public policy and influence debate about platform regulations in US, UK, and European unions.
Okay.
So I put together and analyzed a collection of 210 full-page ads from Facebook and Twitter taken from the Week magazines from May 31st, 2014 to May 6, 2022. So my project compares Facebook and Google's public relations and advertising campaign tactics to those used by big corporations in the early 20th centuries, AT&T telecom companies, showing how the relationship between government and corporations has always been complicated and contested. Governments in the US, UK, and EU have used different laws and regulations over time to either limit, support, or encourage internet and tech development.
Right.
Well, the main message of the campaign is just a twofold. So the first is Facebook and Google tailor their ads in the US and UK to promote the idea of Western liberalism on the internet, pushing responsibilities onto tech companies while claiming technology and the market's efficiency can solve social issues. Second, they pass off responsibilities to government regulators, third-party partners, and consumers, focusing on four things: connectivity, change, collaborations, and control. So even though those ads have regional difference, the main goal is to turn what's often seen as negative, like market monopolies, into a positive thing, with a message that bigger is better. The campaign not only presents their growth as inevitable, but as the best outcome for society. It helps them to limit competitions, gain legitimacy, avoid scrutiny, and delay global regulations. So my paper argues that the sheer size and scope of those campaigns show how bigger is better in terms of winning public resource, shaping opinions, and influence policies in favor of corporate interest, while making it harder for small companies to compete.
Yeah, well, that makes total sense. But I think the scary part there, of course, is if bigger is better, what is the message they're actually putting out there? Is it actually good, a good message, or is it, as you kind of said, it's manipulating people's thoughts?
Right. So what they are saying is actually just, I'm sure that you see some of their campaigns around the airport or bus stations, even that they will just say that because of the size of their company, they are able to bring you more opportunities, give you more job opportunities, or connect small business to potential employees, connect small companies to potential customers, and also that they were able to take out X number of fake informations off their website, or they are able to do some calculations to save the economies or something like that.
Right.
However, that as you probably heard of, that they are actually one of the problem to begin with, right? I think there was a news recently that Google's greenhouse gas emissions are soaring thanks to AI. It's because those technologies, it may seem very invisible, right? You upload your information onto a platform and it seems like it does not have any quantities, but it actually, it's the infrastructure behind it is massive.
It's massive.
It actually does quite a bit of damage to our society.
And I think that's the problem with, you know, these big platforms, because we do think everything's just out there floating around, you know, all this information, but something is powering that to start with.
Yes.
And that's the bit we don't, as you said, we don't see. We don't see what's behind it and even what's going out there. We don't really see. Although I've always wondered, do they not start colliding in the sky when you when you see that. How does the public combat this, or how did the government combat this? Because, I mean, we know these platforms can be super powerful in changing people's opinions and changing what they buy and doing all sorts of things. So, you know, I mean, apart from some governments saying in some countries, no, you can't do this, and then they have backlash. But do we have to be stronger? Do we have to be stronger to keep them in line, so to speak?
Right. So with all kinds of inflated promise on technology-enabled products and systems, our governments and, well, governments around the world and consumers and technology company employees around the world have done quite a bit of counter-movement. So when I say counter-movement, it's either protest or government have the ongoing legislative proceedings against big technology corporations. But some of those proceedings and measures can be limited. So you really focus on very limited problems, such as privacy issues, content moderation issues, antitrust issues.
Right.
But instead of what I think is more, would be more comprehensive, like it really need to separate, to really redraw the boundaries between the private interest and public interest and prioritize public interest in that sense. But, you know, like those counter movements are good initiatives, and some of it has bought back a little bit of autonomy for the society.
Right.
So there are some positive changes going on. I just think that it need to be more systematic.
So how can the research that you're doing help the public understand a little bit more about what is going on?
My project uses insights from political economies to help us better understand the challenge posed by technology corporations. Political economy looks more at how prioritized infrastructure have impacted public systems and public interest over time, and
Right.
gives us a useful lens to study the modern technology platforms. Different regions have developed their own approach to political economies and the shape of their unique histories and cultures, which will become even more relevant for different regions and to help draft up solutions then.
I mean, this is not an easy topic that you've chosen. Well, I don't think it is anyway. You probably think, oh, no, it's fine. But do you think this is something, because technology is changing so quickly,
right?
And as you mentioned, some boundaries are getting a bit more blurred.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the work that you're doing is going to be able to keep up with the pace of change and how we perceive things today?
Well, I actually think the problem is not to keep up with the change, which is one thing that often distracts a lot of research.
Mm-hmm.
To think that the problem with technology is because that it keeps on evolving. But if you look back into the history, the actions of technology companies actually have a lot of similarities to the way pharmaceutical, chemical, oil, and private infrastructure companies have operated in the past. So if we draw lessons from the history, we can see similar patterns. We can better see that where this is going and how can we best draft up legislations that can redirect the course into the right directions. So one of my co-author and supervisor, Mark Andre Gagnon, and I actually wrote a few papers, and we are working on more using framework called ghost management to uncover hidden corporate influence.
Right.
Yeah. So I hope that it will help with the work I'm doing and help the public understand that what's the best solution for the next step.
Because I think that's the important thing. What do we want people to understand out of all of this? Because it can be a little complicated.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in any sort of research, what do we want people to get from this?
Yes.
So thank you so much for coming on. Great to see you again after, you know, a few months. Mm-hmm. And you're still smiling and still have that energy, and I'm loving it. So good luck with the rest of your work. I know you're going to do fabulously. This is an important topic, and I think you're going to do very well in it. So thanks for coming along.
Thank you so much for having me, Colette. And it's so nice to see you again.
Good. Thank you. So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat sadly comes to an end. Don't forget you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CFRC Podcast. Just type in a Grad Chat. Until next week, this is CJ the DJ signing off with a big hooray. Grad Chat.
Join us on Wednesday, November 27th for CFRC's 24-hour Radiothon. Catch all your regular Wednesday favorites, plus some special one-off live programs during this dynamic funding drive event. The fun begins at 8 a.m. Wednesday. Turn on, tune in, rock out.
Cego.
Bujou. Anim.
Danach a. Ak anzeni shuk with an.
Tante.
Ay, ino hadikay.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Hi, I'm Christine Genier. Welcome to Words and Culture, the Athabascan episodes. And when I'm not talking or thinking about language, I'm usually talking or thinking about music. When you think about everything that helps to build societies, not what you think of them, rather the existence of them, you can hear the music behind the pillars. Church, politics, war, love. Because when we are unable to speak our truth, our history, that is when we sing it. Often you will find our histories in song as much as you will find them in text. Danke, our way, the way of the people. Songs have marked important events and told stories. They are gifted between clans and families. In 2017, the documentary Rumble, The Indians Who Rocked the World, gave us an insight into the impact that the Indigenous voice has had on rock music. Indigenous people are all over music, and music is all over our people. One of our common threads is that drum beat, because when what we have to say is too hard to put into writing, too heavy to handle for some, too illegal, or maybe just too big, we put it into song. In the Yukon, our singing talent brings us incredible joy and big love. In this series, we've ended the episodes with a celebration of Indigenous song, and the Athabascan episodes celebrate Yukon artists such as Diet and the Love Soldiers, Vision Quest, Jeremy Parkin, Jerry Alfred, Boyd Benjamin, and Bria Rose. The first time I heard Bria Rose sing was at the fashion show at the 2021 Attica Cultural Festival. Her powerful voice and confident stance struck me and brought a swell of pride to an already incredible evening. Since that night, I've seen Bria Rose performing at many events and see her name all over. She writes and sings many of her own songs, but she also knows her audience. She brings that country twang that is popular on Northern airwaves. A little bit of the Judds, a little bit of Waylon, you know what I mean. Now, Bria Rose is Tahltan. And if you look at the new maps of where our languages are, you'll see that the Tahltan people are situated predominantly in what is now known as British Columbia. However, as I've said a few times on this cast, and I will probably say a few times more, those are not our borders. Tahltan is an Athabascan language, and they are our relations. I got to see Bria Rose recently performing at an event called Whitehorse Connects, a monthly gathering in Whitehorse offering services, meals, and company to those in need. Bria was performing some music over the lunch hour, and I asked her to share some of her story with Words and Culture. I'm so glad I did, because what an incredible conversation with a wonderful person.
The Nathotia, Bria Rose Ushia, Koth Keith Didinake Ushia, Chiona Itzdatse'i. Good day. My name is Bree Rose, and my Tata name is Northwind Blowing, and I'm from the Wolf Clan, and I am from Dees Lake, which is in right in the triangle of the Tahltan territory. I grew up there most of my life. I moved back there a couple years ago to try and make it back in the hometown for a bit, and now I'm here in Whitehorse, so not too far. So go visit, and yeah.
You introduced yourself in language. Are you learning it? Are you speaking Tahltan?
I was fortunate to learn a lot in school. We had it in elementary. I remember growing up, so I had like the basic things that I'll just never forget. And my dad would also speak it around, but and not like only just words that will always stick with me. I know quite a few animals and stuff, but they just launched our Tahltan dictionary online, so now we can all access. It's so awesome! It's so cool.
Would someone just Google that Tahltan dictionary?
Tahltan dictionary. You can type in words, and it's forever. They're still working on it, but I want to give a huge thanks to all the speakers and all of the everybody who made that happen. My friend Haley and TCG for really putting time and effort into getting that recorded and able to. I can search a word, and it's helped me write songs, and it's helped me. Since it's just gotten live in the last year, so I'm so stoked, because I was like going through old school books just to make a song. Recently I did the Jenny House artist residency here along the riverbank in town, and I had to the dictionary wasn't live yet, so I definitely went and had to go through some books and old stuff that I found and cross-check it with some speakers and then create the song. And so it's the best that it's out. It's a huge step forward for our nation and for our language. So
how does it feel? What are the different feelings you have soul-wise performing in English versus performing a song you wrote in Tahltan?
I think it definitely feels more sacred. I say I haven't brought out my work. Like, I only have written two songs so far, and I've only shared them very seldomly over the last year since I created them. One was at the story time that the Yukon Aboriginal Women's Circle is putting on, which was an amazing experience. I can't wait to go back. They're going to have a couple more before they take a break for the summer, and it's like a relief, and it's also... It's kind of sad. I feel like I need to do a lot more. Yeah. Even though I'm a pretty extroverted person, I also know there's been times in my life it's very hard to break into the shell when you're in a room where everybody else is doing cool things, you know? And so you're just like, I want to get there. And sometimes I just need a little pat on the back and a little silence from everybody else to be able to share.
Yeah. Yes. Speaking of that silence, it feels like we've come out of almost a desert when it comes to recognition and validation of Indigenous creatives. And then in the last couple of years, it was just like, oh, hello, you all exist. And yes, we do. And we're very talented, if I may say so. Not a lot of humility in that statement, but we don't really have room for humility in that right now, because it has been late coming, that validation and that recognition. Do you know that shift I'm talking about?
Oh, I understand. I feel like it's like this, like, finally this, like, it's like hope, and it's a bit like a fire. And I think Jeremy Dutcher said it, you know, the Indigenous Renaissance is here, like, you know, and I love that statement so much. And I'm just like, we are, you know, feel like Horton Hears a Who. We are here, we are here, we are here.
I think the only thing I enjoy more than Jeremy Dutcher's music is his sense of style.
Oh, just beautiful. Mwah. Chef's kiss.
Oh, beautiful. Absolutely. I see that you brought some instruments here. You brought your guitar. You brought a skin drum. Yeah. Do you want to do something on drum? A gown?
Yeah, the drum? Yeah. I brought my guitar and my skin drum, depending on which way we want to go. I have Also been a bit self-taught, and then took a little bit of lesson, and took a long time to kind of get a wrap around the instrument and making music with it. But I am still in lessons. I feel like I still want to learn a lot, and I still, because I don't have, you know, the people want to speak in numbers and music, and I don't have that quite yet. I know the letters. I know it's a journey, and I'm so really stoked to be on it.
Okay, I got a
little hairdryer. Let me just hit this quick.
That's okay.
You use a hairdryer to warm your drum. That's
I was in Teletown dancing growing up. We would travel with our drums and we learned some tricks you gotta take. You don't know who's gonna fire, or we would have an oven. We'd go turn that oven up, open the oven. And do that, and then if we finally realize to stop wasting time.
We waste enough time.
We do. It's like, oh my god, it takes all so long to get the chickens in a row, and we finally figured out the hair dryer works the best.
Ooh, yes.
Sometimes, depending on the drum, it takes a little longer. I find with the bigger drums, the wider ring drums, they take a bit more time, and especially if they're changing through the temperatures, if you're loading stuff in and out, they really don't like the cold, but they're so strong that you just take some heat to it. And the air is a more even distribution. Remembering the oven days, man, that took forever.
You're like, traditional way?
Yeah, fire works better than oven.
Yeah.
This song is based off the theme, The Fire Within. And there's some English and some Teltan, and the Teltan part says, no rain, no blue. You will light the fire, fire girl. You will sing, you will love. You will light the fire, fire girl.
What?
Shoete. It is something else to be able to watch in real time the return of the public demonstrations of our power. Thank you, Shonithan. What would you have liked to have seen in your community growing up to support the arts and culture aspect of culture and language revitalization?
You know, I think there's stuff I wish there was now, and maybe that I wish maybe when I was growing up, but I think like now is more needed than before. I felt like we were strong and trying with what we had, and you know, our teachers did very good, like our, because their teachers taught them, like they'd hit us with the drumstick and get your feet in the right spot, and it was serious. If we wanted to go travel, if we wanted to go out of the community and dance and take us there, and money from the dance to take us there, which was like going out of DC, like, was just like woo, you know. So we worked hard, and I felt like we really heeded what was said, but the numbers are so low. You know, it's really, when I seen the Dark Kwan for the first time, I was just bawling. It was just so beautiful, and it was so like organized together, and every, like, you know, they really want to be there, and I was like, oh, that fire, and I don't know what would have changed that, but I do know, like, when, and everybody eventually does, at least for a little bit, even if they go back, you know, has left the territory for whatever it may be, you know, groceries or medical or whatever, but I think when they see kids or people their other age, you know, or their same age, and they know music stuff, I think just knowing more about general music helps us build our culture. Like when I picked up the guitar, I found more interest in the drum because it was something about, I think, the duality of like either knowing both or being able to, like, I can keep a beat and a rhythm or something like that. But now I see it coming back in, and I love that. It's funny, something that I found about northern towns when I went to Old Crow's, that the youth, like the parents, are good at keeping the classics going. Like in the city, it's all Justin Bieber or whatever, but like there's a lot of like metalheads and stuff in East Lake. When I went, like, I was like really surprised. Like we're good at recognizing good classic
music. Good classic, it's either like the classic metal, classic rock, or classic country.
And honky-tonk. It comes through Waylon Jennings is a huge part of our, just like our Tel-Tan culture. Like everybody knows, and everybody knows when Rocky's gonna play, we're gonna get some Run Simon Run, you know.
Well, let's take a break and listen to some music. Jerry Alfred is a Northern Dishonee musician. He received a Juno Award for his recording of Etsy Shone back in 1996, when the category was called Aboriginal Recording of the Year. From that album, this is Sala.
In WT, they say Sala. It's my brother-in-law. He does things fast, like when you go walking, it's hard to keep up with him. You walk all you can, but he's already going the distance, and he's back at home drinking tea while you're halfway out on the line.
Salam kai, salam kai, salam kai.
That was Jerry Alfred and the Medicine Beat with Sala, one of my favorite songs from Jerry Alfred. Every time I hear it, I recall driving into Kuanlin, what we call Whitehorse, on a sunny winter day. You know, just past the darkness, when it's still deep winter, Yuk-A, but the sun is out, bouncing off the snow. I was coming in on the south access, driving along Chuni Kwan, the Yukon River, when that song came on the radio. Shone FM, our beloved indigenous radio in the Yukon, celebrating 40 years this year. Now, when I hear Sala, it evokes that picture and my love of living in the north. I'm speaking with up-and-coming musician and language learner Bria Rose. Bria is from the Tahltan Nation and is speaking to us about singing, music, community, and how her Tahltan language keeps her connected to all three. You're well on your way to establishing yourself as a well-known musician in Northwest Canada, probably beyond that now as well. So when you say you're just learning, I mean, let's not dismiss that. We've seen you really take that stage and take it well over the last couple of years. When did you start performing?
I mean, I remember my first performance as, what's his name? Not Humpty Dumpty, but the snowman, Frosty the Snowman, when I was, and I fought for that role. I remember it was like a class vote and the guy got it and I made a huge tantrum and I ended up giving the role. So that was my first, that was in Deesley, like, at however many years old, where my dad's long john stuffed with pillows, my butt dragging to the floor, and I wanted it so bad. But I on and off had a couple basically open mic performances after I lived in Edmonton, and after I lived in Smithers for a bit. I ran the open mic night at the Smithers Bulky Valley Brewery for a while, which was really awesome and really helped me interact with other artists and grow my own repertoire, because if it was slow, I got to just play. And now my first performance in Whitehorse was for the Tahltan Strong Benefit Concert after the big fire that burned a lot of our Telegraph Creek to the ground. So they had a big, huge fundraiser here in Whitehorse, and I wrote a song about the fire, and I got to come and sing it and help raise money for our people who lost their homes. So that was my first time performing in Whitehorse, and ever since then, I think I've done over 100 performances since April 2022, in and around the territory and in BC and a couple in Alberta as well.
I want to ask you, can you teach me a phrase or a couple of words in Tahltan?
Yeah, you said you were wolf as well, right?
I'm a woman of the wolf clan.
Chiona etstatsei. Chiona etstatsei. It means I'm wolf clan.
Chiona
etstatsei.
Etstatsei.
Yeah.
Chiona etstatsei.
Yeah.
I'm a wolf clan woman.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. And another one. What time of day are we at right now?
1:58.
Well, we're in afternoon still. So the Nath Hotia. The Nath?
The Nath?
Hotia.
Hotia.
Good day.
Zenushok with that. Good day. Shronithan.
Shronithan.
Where can we find Bria Rose music?
You can find Bria Rose music on briarosemusic.com or Bria Rose music on Instagram, Bria Rose music on Facebook. Yeah, check it out. Like us, follow us. We... not only do we have this new debut EP coming out, Sprout, which are collections of songs that I've written anywhere between 10 and 5 years ago, so they're kind of older songs of mine, but we have new music on the way after that, and we're going on tour soon, so follow on Instagram or Facebook or the website, and we'll have all our shows up on there, and... ways to come and jam, and we're available for booking, so if you're interested in bring a little Bria Rose Thorns to your party, let me know. I'm happy to come and oblige and bring a little flame of light.
All right.
right then, let's let Bria Rose take us out. This is Seasons.
The stars were out that winter night we met. You gave me a drink of the whiskey I smelled on your breath. My hands were cold, so you lit up my cigarette. And ever since that day, you've been my best friend. In this world is gonna change, but I hope we stay the same, or at least adapt at a similar pace. And I know that you have to go, and know that I'll miss you so, and I'll see you after I close my eyes. Tonight, that spring when the rain poured down, we stayed in bed and messed around. I'll be yours if you'll be mine. I'll hold you like it was the last time. That fall when the leaves blew strong, our memories played a song. The road is nice that I travel on, but I have no one to sing alone. In this world is gone change, but I hope we stay the same, or at least adapt at a similar pace. And you know that I have to go, and you know that I'll miss you so, and I'll see you after I close my eyes. And you know that I have to go, and you know that I will miss you so, and I'll see you after I close my eyes.